welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Millions of Facebook users in the United States are probably questioning how secure their private information is this week after word came out that a data mining company, Cambridge Analytica, may have misused data from Facebook to influence the 2016 presidential election. Maybe you or someone you know has gone as far as deciding to delete their Facebook accounts altogether. Advertisers have been using information from Facebook and other social media for years. So how is this different? And how can you protect your information? Our guest today is Andrew Hacker, cybersecurity expert in residence at Harrisburg University of Science and Technology. He also is the owner of two companies that are related, and we're going to talk about that as well. Mr. Hacker, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
This is a program that we'd like to have your questions because I'm sure you have a lot of them about Facebook, about social media, about the information that you have online, the information that can be gathered and collected from that social media. Maybe you're one of those people who is thinking about maybe deleting your Facebook account altogether. We'd like to hear what you have to say. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, and on Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Yeah, we're using Facebook to mine information or your comments
That's
and questions
right.
here today. In fact, that terminology that we've heard a lot about this week, data mining, I'm going to start with a very basic question. What is data mining?
So data mining is basically taking all of the data that is available to a company or, you know, some group and trying to make connections out of that data to infer certain information about people's preferences. You know, data mining's been around in some form for, you know, centuries. I mean, just, you know, pulling information about people and what they like to buy, you know, what types of activities they like to do. You know, you could think of it, you know, back, you know, 50 years ago, a telemarketer would call you on the phone. Can I ask you, you know, a couple questions? I mean, that in essence was data mining back in the old days. The difference today is that the amount of information that we as users and consumers produce is skyrocketing. You know, even just that little device that you have in your pocket, you know, your cell phone, whether it's a Facebook app or any kind of app that you use on that phone, is producing massive amounts of data and, you know, learning data about you. And it's really, you know, where does that data go? You know, who manages it? How is it stored? How is it secured? And ultimately, you know, where is it used and who has access to it? Those are the big questions.
So it's safe to say that even though we're using the terminology data mining and that there are companies that this is what they are devoted to, this is their job, that they use social media, they use online information,
sure.
That the big difference is there's much more information out there.
Correct. Right. And there's a lot of more devices that are actually producing this data that these companies are having access to. So, you know, for example, I mean, it might have started with, you know, your television viewing. You know, what channels do you view? What types of programs do you view? I mean, now, obviously, your phone produces all this information. If you think about the health data that gets collected with Fitbit and, you know, all kinds of other, you know, health devices that are actually tracking, you know, all kinds of information about your heart rate and things like that. I mean, that potentially could get used. You know, when do you run? You know, how often do you, you know, are you active? Those types of things. And even more so, think about your car. Cars these days, you know, starting probably, you know, 5 or so years now, they've been tracking pretty much everything you do. That's called telemetry. You know, how fast you're going, how hard you brake, all of that data and all of that information gets stored in that car and sometimes, you know, even transmitted to other providers.
Do they know I'm listening to WITF on the radio?
Yeah, I would think so if you've got a, you know, your radio station is smart enough to be able to transmit that information, I'm sure.
So remember that, folks, as you're in the car and listening to WITF. So this has been going on for some time, and as far as social media goes, we know that Facebook, Twitter, Google, so many of them have been using this information for advertising. What's the difference between using it for advertising and possibly information that could influence votes or voter preferences?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, even over the last couple of years, you know, I think a lot of us have probably noticed that, you know, if they're, you know, doing a search online or they're maybe even potentially, you know, discussing something on social media about a certain product, it's very possible that they might later then see an ad somewhere else based on that conversation. So, you know, the fact that these companies, you know, are going through all the activities that users have, you know, they look at the connections, who you share a certain, you know, piece of information with. It could be a product that you share to 10 friends, right? So they're aware of that. They might actually potentially, you know, send advertising directed and very targeted, you know, to your friends that have, you know, quote unquote, liked that particular product. So it's very pervasive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but that's the advertising part. What about the voters? I mean, when did, I assume that right away that when social media became popular, that there were people who said, you know what, we can maybe influence voters here with this rather than just using it as an advertising tool.
Yeah, I mean, typically you can think of a lot of times you'll see somebody post a comment that, you know, could be a political based comment. The thing is that comment gets tagged, right? It will get flagged with, you know, maybe some particular political leaning one way or the other. So if somebody likes that, then they've got that information about that particular leaning. I think they say, you know, with some of these applications, these third-party applications that kind of plug into Facebook's, you know, big API, it's application programming interface. Okay. So that's basically, these applications are designed to kind of, you know, connect into Facebook's database, so to speak, right? So once they do that, they claim that if you have 300 likes between you and somebody else, that that application would know you as well as your spouse, right? So that's where it kind of gets really interesting is, you know, that's sort of this psychograph that they create, which is basically all of these data points, you know, they make connections between them. And the more connections they have, the more certain they are about what your particular preferences are as a user.
Even when you're using Instant Messenger?
Well, that's, you know, there's a lot of debate about that. You know, the social media giants, as they're called, they deny that they're looking through private messages. You know, and I've heard stories, you know, not confirmed or anything like that, where people have been, you know, having conversations with certain keywords in there, and then they might receive an advertisement for, you know, what they were discussing. So that's when it actually starts getting a little bit more scary.
The data, we're talking about Cambridge Analytica, the data was mined through Facebook users, or at least this is the, I don't know whether accusations were, because nothing has been charged, but suspicions, put it that way, using an app, and then the data was passed to Cambridge Analytica. They say they deleted this data in 2015 when they found out gathering it did not meet Facebook's terms of use. But the question is whether that data was actually deleted.
Right.
Is there any way of telling?
Yeah. No, it's one of those horse out of the barn kind of thing. I mean, once that data, you know, leaves the, you know, the databases of a particular company, it's, you know, it could be anywhere. I mean, it could be copied multiple times. And one of the other things to keep in mind too is, so if Cambridge did this quote unquote analysis on the data, it's very possible they could have deleted the original data, but still had, you know, the analytics of it. So still had all of the connections that they made. They might not have deleted that. In fact, that could have belonged to Cambridge, right? So that's their quote-unquote product. They might have deleted the original, you know, Facebook data, but still, you know, had the output of that. Mm. So,
you know, and as the story goes, and again, I have to point out that no criminal charges, nothing. I mean, now, Mark Zuckerberg was on CNN this morning where he apologized and said it was a breach of trust and that they're going to try to get better. We'll talk about maybe some things that social media networks can do. But what has been talked about this week with Cambridge Analytica is that what they would do is put out this personality quiz on Facebook that people would take. And then once people actually did that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they really weren't, were they really interested in the answers, or are they just interested in getting access to the friends on of those people who were taking the quiz?
That's a good question. I think the answer is both. Okay. I mean, I think on some level, the answers to those questions sort of help, you know, frame, you know, certain graph, you know, as I call it, a psychograph, and that maybe just gets reinforced by, you know, what the friends of that person in that circle might also, you know, contribute to. So I think the answer is both, you know, there's probably different types of information that they would get from each.
But there were only a few hundred thousand people who took this personality quiz, but what it did was it gave them access to all the information of their friends.
Yeah.
Is that where this went wrong?
Yeah, I think they said it was probably about every one person that was quote-unquote mined. They had access to about 200 of their friends. So, yeah, that's where they got the 15 million number. But, yeah, I mean, really...
That, 50 million, yeah.
50 million, right, yeah. Right. So, yeah, I think that's the danger, too. I mean, that's kind of the so-called network effect, which is what, you know, initially makes social media so powerful, right? Is, you know, if I got, one, you know, one friend who tells 10 friends who tells 10 friends, I mean, you know, that's a large message. So... You know, while that works for, you know, sort of the social media aspect of it, it also does work for the data mining aspect in that, you know, myself and my 1,000 connections, I mean, that's a lot of information. You know, you could cover, you know, almost, you know, the whole United States really with just, you know, 100,000, you know, well-placed social media people, right?
So, well, the scarier part about that is that the friends... that if someone took this personality quiz, they are making the decision to, yes, I'm going to take this personality quiz,
right.
Try to learn something about myself, if it is legit. But if there's any science behind it, I always wondered about that.
Yeah.
But your friends have no say in the matter. I mean, you're basically giving that company the okay to, you know, mine the information that your friends provide.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, it really all comes back down to... you know, really understanding, you know, actually, even first, what data about you is out there and where it is, who has it, who has access to it. But then also, you know, what are some of the settings you can use? And, you know, I hate to say it, but people really never read the terms of use of any services. And you know, in fact, that's always been a lot of the controversy even before, you know, this whole Cambridge thing broke, was that, you know, people kind of just blindly accept, you know, I'm going to install this app. I like using it. And in those terms and conditions, they typically say, you know, we basically own everything that you send up into our application. I mean, Facebook's had that for a while, you know, all your photos. I mean, you know, they might be changing some of those terms and conditions now and some of those privacy settings, but generally speaking, you know, they keep and they hold all of your personal photos that you've ever uploaded to the system since day one you've used it.
We actually had a story a couple of weeks ago. One of our State Impact Pennsylvania reporters, a photo that she put on her Facebook and other social media that came up in a hearing in Washington of the Russians used it for one of their stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a good example of how you just put a photograph up there and you don't know who can use it.
Right.
So we had a question here from Linda ask, can a landline telephone be tapped like other technology, like cell phones? Or are they completely and isolated from this kind of interference?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, typically speaking, yes, landlines are generally more secure because of the fact that it's so-called point-to-point, meaning it's, you know, your phone connects directly to the telephone company. And, I mean, unless somebody goes out to the telephone pole and, you know, puts some kind of device on there, the answer is yes, it is more protected than the Internet, which is open.
Even though there are so many landlines today that go through an Internet connection.
Oh, right. Well, that's different. So two different types of phones. One would be, it's called POTS, plain old telephone system, which is...
Is that a real term or you just make that up?
No, POTS, that's been around.
Okay,
Yeah, that's
just too simple, you know?
That's telecommunication jargon. But yeah, so anything that has the two wires that you plug into the wall jack that doesn't go to your internet router, right? So if it goes to your Comcast or your Verizon, that's known as voice over IP, VOIP. That goes on the internet. That could be looked at, although generally they have encryption for those connections on VoIP. But yeah, POTS, that's pure electrical, right?
Okay.
So there's no network involved in that other than the telephone network. So yeah, I mean, unless it's James Bond, somebody going out and, you know, throwing a jack on your connection, it's pretty safe.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about data mining and Cambridge Analytica. You've heard a lot of that company's name this week, and that they have been accused, or there has been some talk, and I say accused, there are, again, no criminal charges or anything like that, that this company used information that they got improperly through Facebook, through an app, and took information from Facebook users and got the information of the friends of the people who are taking a personality test, use that information to influence the 2016 presidential election. We know there are a lot of questions, and even the basic questions are good ones today. Are you one of those people? I mean, I've heard a number of people this week who have said, you know, I'm thinking about deleting my Facebook account. Or Maybe you, for some reason, you didn't get on Facebook in the first place. We'd like to hear your story. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. And yes, you can use Facebook to leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Our guest is Andrew Hacker, cybersecurity expert in residence at Harrisburg University of Science and Technology. He owns two other companies that are related. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the program. 1-800-729-7532. We've touched on it, Andrew, but what went wrong in this case that you see?
Right. I mean, there are several issues. I mean, one is, you know, just the fact that all that data exists in one place, I think, is a big issue. You know, when you have, you know, a majority of a lot of the things that you do in your life, you know, digitally speaking, you know, hosted and maintained by, you know, one large company, you know, the fact that that's all pretty centralized is certainly a concern. The second piece is, you know, how those companies, you know, not only use that information, but also protect it. You know, when companies have, you know, access to that much information, really they owe their usership some responsibility for how they manage that data. And that's they're, you know, evidenced by, you know, a lot of the really large breaches that have happened over the past, you know, 5 years or so have been very large companies that have a lot of user data, and they haven't really done everything they've can to protect it. And unfortunately, you know, even though it's being worked on now, the regulation or the regulatory you know, presence in the United States is not, you know, up to what it should be. The European Union actually has some, you know, pretty solid privacy laws in place that, you know, that force these large companies to actually, you know, really take the privacy and the cybersecurity of all of this data seriously. And I think, you know, it's the more breaches that happen here with, you know, United States-based companies, you know, I think the public is definitely starting to become more aware of the fact that, hey, you know, there's all this data out there about me, and, you know, I really want to make sure that the companies that I'm, you know, interacting with are doing everything they can to protect it.
What are they doing in Europe that we're not doing here?
Yeah, well, they have some legislation called GDPR, you know, General Data Protection Regulations, which actually, you know, set a framework out there for, you know, what companies' responsibilities are when they have user data. You know, what kind of cybersecurity, you know, protocols do they need to use? How do they encrypt that data? You know, how do they notify users when they, you know, share that data or sell that data? So, you know, they've had that in place for a couple of years now, and, you know, the United States is working on something similar, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, selling that data, that is one of the things that when we've talked, you know, we talked about the last 50 years, people calling, we know that that has happened for the longest time. Is that something that went wrong here, is that the data is being sold?
Yeah. I mean, it to me, it's more of, it's really just coming to light and public attention. You know, I think it's been going on for years. I mean, and it's not just limited to Facebook. I mean, it's really, you know, any company that you're interacting with digitally, you know, potentially has access to that information. I mean, you think about search engines and everything you do on, you know, Google, essentially, you know, they track that. That's still, I mean, unless you, you know, go in there and purposely delete it, you know, they have your search history and, you know, even your GPS coordinates. If you have, you know, use Google Maps, you know, every place that you've visited when you have your GPS locator on is, you know, sitting in a database somewhere at Google. So, and that's really, if you think about it, that's how they make their money. You know, if you think about Facebook, and you think about their revenue, you know, they made, I think, $40 billion last year. You know, I don't know exactly how much, but probably a majority of that is made on advertising and really the value of the information, the data that they have, you know.
Mark Zuckerberg gave that interview this morning to CNN, and he actually said, maybe we do need to be regulated more.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting.
Right.
How often do you hear a company CEO say, we want more regulation?
Right.
Now, my guess is deep down, he probably doesn't. But this company is really taking a hit right now.
Yeah, certainly. And it really comes down to, you know, what role is Facebook playing in all this? You know, this kind of goes back to, are they sort of a service provider? Are they a platform? You know, in some cases, it's like the telephone company. The telephone company provides the network for people to communicate. but they're not necessarily responsible for, you know, the information that gets communicated over that telephone network. So I think it's really Mark Zuckerberg saying, hey, you know, really, I don't want to be involved in this kind of thing. You know, I'd rather just, you know, provide the quote unquote social network and, you know, let everybody else kind of police it. So it almost kind of seems like he's, you know, trying to maybe, you know, wash his hands of some culpability for this. So
we have an email from listener Randall who says, actually, I like it when internet sites present ads that have tailored information Google or others have gathered on me. I found good sales on things I'm interested in as a result. What concerns me, though, and what I'd like to ask about, is the way in which organizations such as Cambridge Analytics use this information to create information bubbles that feed false or misleading stories with a political slant to users. Can anything be done to eliminate this bubble phenomena? I know that free speech means that you can write whatever absurdly a biased view you have, but can't sites such as Facebook or YouTube do a better job of offering alternative views or facts?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, I mean, certainly, you know, if you're trying to find an item to purchase and, you know, some kind of targeted suggestions, I mean, certainly help if there's something you're not aware of. And it really, I mean, it comes down to, you know, are you opting into, you know, your data being used this way? I mean, if you're just, if you say, hey, you know, I want some help here, I mean, that's one of the powers of the internet is, you know, the free flow of information, access to information. And I think in the end, it really comes down to what is the quality of information you're being presented. And that's where, you know, this whole fake news thing comes in, is it's really hard to tell now for the general user, you know, the source of that information, where that information's come from. Is it corroborated by anything? Is it backed up by facts, or you know, is it just something that someone, you know, threw together as an advertisement? So, you know, I think a lot of work needs to be done as far as sort of, you know, quantifying and classifying this information, maybe even putting, you know, a tag on there that says, hey, you know, this is backed by, you know, these three research articles.
But who does that? Who would put a tag on that? I mean, Facebook would. I mean, they say they monitor,
sure,
you know, information that's online so that there aren't like threats of violence being made,
right,
or, you know, things on their content on there that shouldn't be on there. But Or are we asking them to be fact checkers too?
Right. And then, yeah, exactly. Who's doing that fact checking? I mean, is there a room of, you know, 100 people that kind of go through and look at this by hand? You know, one of the things Mark Zuckerberg did say this morning, though, is he's got, quote unquote, artificial intelligence, you know, a general term that is, you know, looking at these kinds of things and trying to determine what's fake news and what's not fake news, which kind of brings up the question. So, you know, what algorithms are these artificial intelligence applications using? Right. And who's creating those, and, you know, what are their goals? You know, is it to, you know, anything that sort of looks like it's, you know, fake news just getting deleted? I mean, what, you know, what's the process that something, you know, a piece of data goes through to determine its validity? You know, and you know, I think that's kind of a whole new data science now that's starting to spring up. I don't think there are a whole lot of companies that are, you know, really starting to look at that. But there are companies that are certainly starting to build frameworks where all of this becomes possible.
Before we take phone calls, you brought it up, AI, artificial intelligence. One of your companies actually deals in that.
Correct. Yeah, we're building basically a new product called the Thought Network, where what we're doing is actually creating smart data, which will actually go a long way towards helping this problem, which is that, you know, right now data doesn't really do much on its own. In fact, you know, you have a photo, you might upload it to Facebook, but the photograph just sits there until, you know, one of Facebook's applications actually works with it, tags it, you know, does something with it. So generally what we're trying to do is make all pieces of data have a little bit of information, a little bit of logic in it that makes it a little bit more intelligent. So what this can do is, if I have a piece of data like a photograph, I can say, you know, I only want it to be accessible by these companies, or I only want it to be used for, you know, showing me, you know, products that I might want to purchase, right? So we have a lot more control. It gives a lot more control back to users about how their data is used, who has it, how it's managed, privacy, right? Because we can actually, we can, you know, use algorithms to actually change the privacy of certain information. And healthcare, for example, you know, we have all of our personal healthcare information. So it might be nice that, you know, I might want to share all of my data with my doctor, but I might not want to share all of it with, you know, some research company that's, you know, looking at the effectiveness of a drug, let's say. So I would be able to do that. I would be able to say, if you're my doctor, then here, you can have access to all of it. if you're a researcher, then I'm going to give you, you know, a certain piece of this information. So
how far along are you on that?
Well, we've been working on this product probably for about 4 years. So I would think within the last year, we're actually building the artificial intelligence pieces of it. You know, the way we see this is, you know, right now, artificial intelligence, you know, data usage, there's no transparency whatsoever because we have a lot of huge companies that, you know, basically data mining all of our information. They don't really tell us what they're doing with it, how they're processing it, you know, who's having access to it. But we want to kind of change that. We want to say, well, we're going to provide a platform that says, you know, we can all build logic and algorithms that say, here's how we want our data to be used, right? Here's the artificial intelligence algorithms that we are going to allow our data to be processed with. And that's what we're building right now. We have prototypes out there already.
So. Let's take some phone calls. Paul is in Lancaster. Paul, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, let me preface what I'm going to say by I do no way support what Cambridge Analytica did. Subversive, immoral, illegal, whatever. I guess all that will come out in the weeks to come. I always look at it this way. Long ago, we were told, I remember MySpace, and then Facebook took over. Don't put things like phone numbers, email addresses, and I'm still amazed to see the amount of information right. that people put out there on Facebook for everyone to see. And then piggybacking on that, also things like the whole fake news phenomenon. And I'm not a supporter of the current administration, but when that kind of information came out, you had to buy into that narrative, first of all. And, you know, I'm always at odds with what's going on with this because all that stuff is out there, but it's your choice as to what you just choose to believe at face value and what kind of research you are doing.
Hey, Paul,
that's pretty much what I have to offer.
Thank you very much for your call, and he makes a couple of really good points. Let's start with the first one, though. He said he is amazed at how much information that people put out there.
Right.
I think we all could probably agree with that, and we probably, many of us, if not most of us, are guilty of it
right.
because we become, I don't know, we feel secure in it. We feel confident that the information is just being shared amongst friends.
Right.
But what about that, the information that people put out?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, really, I think it's generally the fact that this is a new phenomenon, right? And I think we're used to having the general disposition of trust first, and then if you give me a reason not to trust you, then I won't trust you, right? You know, because we grew up in a world, many of us, and I'm probably saying my age, you know, grew up without computers. And even now, you know, my kids, you know, started out, they're 1, 2 years old and they have them. So they're probably more used to this kind of thing. But you know, I think we grew up in a world where we didn't have to worry about privacy and cybersecurity. Whereas now, you know, we're just not used to it. It's a new thing for us. And I think a lot of us just really have to adjust to that mindset of, you know, really don't trust, you know, anything that you see on your screen. Or, you know, anything that a particular application might tell you or what they do with your data. So, you know, really understanding that everything that you put out there, you know, A, stays out there, right, unless you, you know, actively take it down. But really just, you know, the network effect means that pretty much the whole world has potential to see something, you know, especially if when in the early days of Facebook, there were really no privacy settings. You know, you have to, you know, that was a newer thing over the last probably 4 or 5 years ago. I think they started putting in, you know, these really more sophisticated privacy controls. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely really need to be careful about what you put out there. I mean, granted, if you have your privacy settings set to, oh, only my friends can see it. But, you know, what's your level of friends? It's your close friends, your, you know, outer circle, and then they have their friends, and who shares it with who? You know?
I am amazed when I see people who have 2,000-3,000 friends.
Yes.
And I never get above 400, but and I'm like, okay, am I that unpopular, or is it? No, it's actually I've made an effort to kind of keep it down that
right.
way. But and I want to get back to what we can do to protect ourselves. Let's not forget that during our conversation. But I want to go to the second part of Paul's comment there. How much responsibility do we have knowing, I mean, we go in with the knowledge, it almost makes us cynical, going in with the knowledge that someone is trying to influence you, whether it's advertising, whether maybe it's the stories that you're seeing, how much responsibility do we have to question what we're reading online?
Yeah. I think we have a big responsibility to question what we read online. I mean, it's, you know, it's with anything else. If, you know, even in the days of reading books, you know, there were, you know, fiction books and nonfiction books, and even the nonfiction books were, you know, written with a certain, you know, perspective in mind. So, you know, when you read something, anything, regardless of the source, it's really trying to understand, you know, a little bit more about what's the face value of it. You know, I mean, even today, you know, even scarier is, you know, some of these video programs now can make, you know, put the face of one person on another, you know, entirely different video, and you wouldn't know the difference. So, I mean, it really is true that you can almost, you know, not really trust anything that you really see or read online until, you know, do your background checks. And, you know, if you see a link to a particular article, follow the link. You know, go look at some, you know, the views of the one side, and also look at the views on the other side and make your own decisions.
But there are a couple buts there.
Yeah.
Doesn't that lead, if, okay, you follow that lead, it may take you to some websites,
sure,
or to some stories that you don't want to see.
Right.
And that, you know, then you could actually increase the number that you see from sources like that.
Correct. Right. Well, yeah, I mean, let's just say it's one particular topic. You know, I mean, go, you know, write to some search engine and, you know, type in that subject, see what comes up, and kind of browse through it. You know, I mean, if you haven't looked at one or two or three or four different sources other than the one that you're looking at, then you really don't have the full perspective. You're taking, you know, it for face value.
And by the way, when you said in the days of books, I still read books.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Let's take a phone call from Jean in Columbia. Jean, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. It's not just social media. When you go to the doctor's office, if you give them your phone number, they print it on your claim form, and your insurance company can then sell it. And with as much money as they're charging for premiums, you shouldn't be making out on selling our information.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very much for your call. The point that she makes is that, and it's something you kind of touched on a little bit earlier, that it is not just social media, that everything today is online, and someone can use that information.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I said before, that it's just really very prevalent. And, you know, I think, you know, Facebook kind of got in the situation where, you know, it came to light in a certain way. But, yeah, I mean, we always really have to be careful about, you know, what information we give out. I mean, you know, even the checkout line when you're asked, you know, what's your phone number, you know, I usually don't give that out because, you know, they will sell it. And, you know, just keep that in mind. You know, every time you're doing something, is what information am I, you know, quote unquote, leaving behind when I do certain thing here or there, you know?
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Our guest today is Andrew Hacker, cybersecurity expert in residence at Harrisburg University of Science and Technology, owner of two companies. We were just talking about something that his company is trying to develop and using artificial intelligence that may aid in privacy on social media, on social networks. If you have a question or a comment, we've heard some good comments already, but we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. And I think there'd be some irony if you use WITF's Facebook page to leave a question or a comment. You can leave that question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. One of the big questions, and a few of our callers have already mentioned this, and I'm sure they're looking for some advice, Andrew. What can one do to protect themselves against these kind of attacks or this kind of phishing for information, using your own information? In other words, how can we keep our private information private?
Right. I think the first thing to do is just generally understand, you know, what kinds of information that you're putting out there, right? And also, you know, the second part of that is understand, you know, what is actually collecting that information, right? What devices, what applications, what digital things, right? Because there's a lot more digital things that are starting to come out now that are smarter and that understand more. And when I say that, I mean, you know, so we know our phone is collecting information about us, right? You know, what about our cars? What about other devices that are in our house that
smart
are smart?
Speakers.
Yeah, smart speakers, smart refrigerators, you know, child's toys. Basically, any device that you can put into your home that you have to put in a Wi-Fi connection to, you can guarantee that that's collecting information about you. There have been some stories about children's toys that take video, record audio, and then send that back up to the company who produces those toys. And there's been some breaches where, other hackers have gotten in there and stolen all information about that's got voice recordings of their children. Right. So just, understanding who's, what devices are actually recording your information, and think even more now about devices that respond to your voice. Right. So the Google Homes, the Alexas, they're fun. Kids love them. But are those devices listening to your conversations? And, I've even heard stories of, people talking amongst themselves about a particular thing and then going onto the computer and seeing an advertisement for that. So that, that kind of, gets really scary. So,
very scary.
Yeah. So, once you understand, where that information is getting collected, the other thing is really to demand from the companies that are collecting this information that they have responsible policies and that you're aware of what they are on how they're protecting your data. And, if they are indeed selling it, do they have any responsibility to notify you if they do? All these kinds of things. If you've check them out and make sure you understand what's going on.
Well, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, more regulation.
Right. Yeah. And it's, there's definitely certain baseline of things that these companies need to do to protect your data, whether it's, encrypting that data when it's sitting on their database. Because, it's not only just how they use that information, but, in the event that somebody does break into that company and is able to steal information, what's the impact of that? And how much information would they have there? I mean, it's happened many times. I mean, you just look at the Equifax breach, how much information they had about us as, consumers and financial entities. There was a lot of information that those hackers broke in and stole. So
Let's go to Pierce in York. Pierce, you're on the air.
Hi. So there's something that I haven't heard talked about a lot, but it seems to me that with the right kind of software, you could use a neural network. Like, some company like Google or Facebook could use a neural network to track a person just based off of their, searching patterns, how they type, what they search for, and be able to figure out who that person is, no matter where they are in the world, what computer they're using, and map them to, a social media account or whatever. And I don't know if there's any privacy protections for that.
Thank you very much for your call.
Yeah, certainly. That's definitely true. There are certain very, very specific things. It's called fingerprinting. So if a camera takes a picture of your face, they, it's a facial fingerprint, which would, connect some distances between your eyes and things like that. And that would be very specific to you, kind of not unlike a real fingerprint. How you type, what types of searches that you make, that can all fingerprint you. And even, we've got smart meters in our home now that really have a very fine, monitoring of how we use energy. They can even, so I've heard, tell that when your dishwasher turns on because of the fingerprint of, how your dishwasher uses electricity. So, yeah, it does get very sophisticated. I know Google had started, I'm not sure what the state of their pilot was, but they were going to start tying, your search patterns, online to your purchases in store, right? So now we're starting to bridge the digital world with, your physical activities, right? So, yeah, I mean, it just gets more and more, there's more data, there's more connections being made. I think if this could be considered a good thing right now is the fact that there still are silos based on different companies. So Facebook has your data in a certain place and Google has it in another place. And, I guess it's probably a good thing that they're not actually sharing that information between themselves. But eventually that could happen, and maybe they are even selling things back and forth between each other.
I want to get back to our original conversation and what kind of started this whole thing about Cambridge Analytica. The Obama campaign in 2008 was, they were described as pioneers for the kind of information that they mined, and a lot of it from social media, how they used it, knowing voter preferences and that kind of thing. I read a couple articles this week, by the way, online, and the very first one I read, I thought to myself, okay, I don't recognize this publication or this website. So I kind of dismissed it in a way. But then I saw one from a more credible news website that was saying kind of the same thing. So the question is that In 2008, the Obama campaign was using a lot of this information that Cambridge Analytica may have used. What is the difference between what Obama, the campaign Obama did in 2008, and what Cambridge Analytica may have done and used for the Trump campaign in 2016?
Right. I think that there's a lot of differences. Being transparent and open about how it's being used, whether permission was granted or not granted, I don't have.
That's
the
one of
to
the
any
big.
Of
that's it apparently is one of the big differences.
Right. Yeah, and also I think. Back then, using social media for this kind of things was relatively new. And I think maybe, expectations now, I think it's a lot more, in the public eye and public view. I think a lot more people are aware of, the fact that all this data is out there on social media. So, some of it could have been timing. Some of it could be been openness and transparency, which are all very important. Transparency is key. And even with net neutrality, it's, if you're going to, segment off the internet this way, as long as you're transparent about how you're doing that and aren't, doing something in, some back server room that nobody knows how you're doing things, then I think that's the important piece.
Social media has done a lot of positive over the last 10 years. I mean, being able to reconnect with long-lost friends and family, staying in touch with the family, being able to share pictures if parents right. or grandparents are distance, living at a distance. Other countries, it has let the world know what's happening in some of these countries where the media can't or won't report on some of the things happening. But it also has contributed to the divide that we have in this country. And I'm talking specifically about the United States, that especially since 2016, when that election was so divisive, that it just seems as though, you almost see more anger, more division than you do coming together on social media.
Yeah, it's definitely true that there's power for good and power for, not so good. And really what it all boils down to is this quote unquote network effect, right? And if you think about, it's a force multiplier, right? So anything that you would see under normal circumstances, if you throw social media on top of it and the network and all of these connections, it basically multiplies everything that you're seeing. So it's not surprising to me, that there's a lot more debate and some of it good, some of it not so good. And people just really need to understand that what they're seeing is a multiplying effect of, all of these people interacting. And it's more public, right? Whereas, before you can have conversations and debates around the dinner table, now it's, it's online for you and your, 500 friends to see. Interesting, I said dinner table, whereas, now we actually have our phones at our dinner table. We need to get back to actually having real discussions. So.
Yeah, so much has changed. How many friends you have?
Oh, I'm not even sure. Maybe 400.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use it to, look at pictures that my wife posts, but not too much else.
there are several people I've seen this week who've said that they're considering deleting their Facebook account. And they were weighing the pros and cons. They were afraid they were going to miss something. But there were others who said that I just can't do without it today, not because it's like they're addicted to it, although I'm sure there are some people
stay
like
connected.
That. But stay connected to people they work with, the businesses they deal with, being updated. I interviewed a gentleman last week who is considered an expert on media who said that the majority of people today are getting their news through Facebook. Now, that says a whole lot right there, and it just makes it even more important about what we're talking about today when the majority of Americans are getting their news through Facebook. So I ask how many friends. I'm about the same. I think I'm between 400 and 500 and don't really want to go beyond that, but I don't know. I'm one of those people that I feel like I probably can't do without it because I do look at so many news sites.
Right. Well, just understand what the value is for you. If it's staying connected and, seeing a news article here and there, fine. And also understand what information you're putting there. I mean, if you're, use it for a specific purpose and you know what that purpose is, then I think you're fine. And, as a result of all this latest you know, happenings, I guess. Facebook is probably going to up their game as far as disclosures and controls that you have over what information goes where. So I think, you know, in the end, it'll be a good thing. And as long as you use it responsibly and understand what it is, then I think you're in good shape.
We only have a few minutes left, so if you'd like to squeeze a phone call in before the end of the program with Andrew Hacker, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Again, I get back to how people used to use Facebook, and I think about when I first went on Facebook, that it pretty much was a fun activity.
Yeah.
A lot of people that I communicated with that I hadn't seen in years and, you know, were catching up aren't on as much anymore. Have you noticed kind of the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Facebook's gone through its, I don't know if you want to call them generations or you know, evolution.
Yeah, the kids don't like it now that the mom and dad and grandpa and grandma are
They're
on.
Photobombing their parties. I think it's, you know, it's evolved over time and, you know, there's a lot more information on there now. There's a lot more functionality in the platform that wasn't there initially. So, I mean, it's like anything else. And, you know, there's always going to be some new application that comes out and as a way for people to connect and share things. So
it's funny how people get so upset when Facebook changes
a certain setting.
Setting or something like that.
Right. Yep.
But yet, when it comes to privacy, it's not one of those things that people get. Maybe now they will get upset about it. But, you know, change a setting or how something looks in a format.
Right.
And it's like, oh, what are they doing? I'm never going to go on Facebook again. We only have a few minutes left. And Andrew, I want to thank you very much. And notice I didn't make a reference to your name today during the program at all. But that was your God-given name, right? Or your
Correct.
Parents gave you the name, right?
Yep.
It was Destiny.
Yes, it was, apparently.
Let's go to Mitchell, who is in Lancaster. Mitchell, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, hi, Scott. Hi. I tuned in a little late, but some people were commenting about having their telephone numbers used and sold, and same thing with their email addresses. Almost everybody has a cell phone or a smartphone these days. We keep a landline just for that kind of junk mail. So everything is monitored that comes in on landline. And usually people hang up because they're solicitations. Very little comes onto our cell phone. Same thing with email addresses. You can still get a cheap or cost-free email address from AOL or Gmail, even Comcast if you're a subscriber. So use one particular email address just for junk mail. Use that whenever you do a purchase online.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call. Some strategies, good strategies?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you have a certain email address, you know, specifically for registering on, you know, sites where you buy things, that's a very, very good recommendation.
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds complicated. I mean, I have trouble keeping track of all the passwords I have. by the way, is there an app out there that I could do that?
There's what they call password managers. That actually you can store all of your passwords in one place and just have to remember one. And some people might argue that's not a good thing to have all your passwords in one place, but they're pretty secure. You know, it's definitely worth having that kind of application, because then you can, you know, control what level of, you know, security you have on various sites and things like that.
You know, this is a basic cybersecurity question, but I think it's worth repeating. Password protection, password security is very important, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. And most of you hopefully by now have heard of two-factor authentication, which is username, password, but also, you know, maybe a text to your phone that has another PIN. Certainly for your online banking, that's a must.
Mm. We only have a minute left, and Andrew Hacker from Harrisburg University of Science and Technology, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. A lot of good information. Message that you would leave with Facebook social media users?
Know what data you're putting where, and, you know, understand that these companies have a lot of information about you, and use them, you know, responsibly.
Don't get to that point where you do take it for granted that the information is going to be secure.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Hacker is with the Harrisburg University of Science and Technology, has his own companies as well. Thank you very much for being with us today, Andrew.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about mental illness and actually maybe I don't know whether it's prevention is the right word to use or not, but I guess it is accurate. Maybe getting in on a person's mindset very early on, where mental illness can be treated when some symptoms are noticed or there's some suspicions in the own person's mind, and maybe prevent it from getting worse. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in there. You know, the last 2 weeks, we've also done programs on property taxes. Allentown Morning Call had a really interesting series last week. We're going to have the reporters on Monday's program about a loophole that where millions of dollars in property taxes is not being paid. That will come up on Monday.